This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a small town receives a large sum to create a community gathering place.
Plus, several other communities restructure the images they portray to potential visitors and their residents. And we take a ride on a rolling restaurant.
But first, Arkansas home sales for December are up. The new report shows more than 17% increase in homes sold as compared with the same time last year. People are able to sell homes for a bit of profit, and interest rates are down. Carolyn Cobb, executive broker with Coldwell Banker, says she doesn't foresee much change over the next few months.
I do anticipate, and from what I'm hearing, interest rates are going to stay steady, certainly with the first part of the year. We don't anticipate great jumps in that. Low interest rates, it's an excellent time to buy a home.
She says last year was a good year for real estate.
The price of homes, the average price went up, let me see, like 1.69% for the average prices for the year. We continue to have low interest rates, so we anticipate that next year will be a good year for real estate as well.
According to the Arkansas Realtors Association, the state's average home price for the year, just over $158,000. Pulaski County in central Arkansas saw the highest average home prices for the year at nearly $190,000. Home prices in Benton County were almost $185,000, while Washington County's average home prices for the year came in just over $177,000.
One of the trails that makes up the backbone of Fayetteville's trail system has received some recognition from a National Trails Organization. The Rails to Trails Conservancy recognized Frisco Trail as its Trail of the Month for December 2013. The national nonprofit highlighted the trail because of the city's use of abandoned and active railroad corridors for development of a multi-use trail. Matt Mihailovich, Fayetteville's Trails Coordinator, says that using rail corridors for trails development has a substantial advantage.
One of the biggest, also the biggest savers is that the grade is already pretty well cut in, the slope, it's not very steep. You have a real nice corridor to use. And that's actually the Chalagee Trail, which stands for Cherokee, that we're building south of MLK, is also on an old rail line. So it does help. And that corridor is kind of already carved out from the property, from different properties, so makes a real nice place for a trail.
And it's right up about the trail. The Rails to Trails Conservancy said that although Frisco Trail is a relatively short rail-shared trail at 1.3 miles, nationally nearly 10% of rail-related trails have trails adjacent to or within an active rail corridor right-of-way.
The Fayetteville School Board is in the middle of a search for the school district's next superintendent, and the board is scheduled to interview one prospective candidate during a meeting tonight. Dr. Tom Kimbrell has served as commissioner of the Arkansas Department of Education for the past 4.5 years, but according to the school district, he's expressed interest in being the next superintendent of Fayetteville Schools. Prior to serving as commissioner at the State Education Department, he was executive director of the Arkansas Association of Educational Administrators and held various leadership and superintendent positions in several Arkansas school districts. Vicki Thomas, Fayetteville's current superintendent, announced her resignation earlier this month to care for an ailing relative. She'll leave her position June 30th.
Spring enrollment totals are in for Northwest Arkansas Community College. While the overall enrollment of 7,546 represents a decrease of 6.1%, NWAC officials say that decreased enrollment is a trend facing many community colleges this year. In addition, the number of high school students enrolled concurrently at NWAC increased by 23 to 572. While overall enrollment at NWAC for the spring semester declined, spring enrollment at Arkansas Tech University's Ozark campus has again set an enrollment record. The enrollment of 1,898 students this semester represents a 4% increase from spring 2013, a nearly 15% increase since 2012, and an increase of nearly 35% since 2011. All 4 years represented spring enrollment records for the college.
The University of Arkansas says the multimillion-dollar deficit accrued by its advancement division will be eliminated in the current fiscal year. According to the university, a reallocation of $2.3 million from the university's contingency reserve fund will be used to fully fund the advancement division's annual budget for an interim period. The contingency fund is intended to meet necessary expenses that arise after the traditional budgeting process concludes. The university's current major fundraising campaign is expected to increase its endowment over the next few years, resulting in additional revenue. A fraction of that expected revenue will go to the Advancement Division to balance its annual budget and to repay the contingency fund. However, the current $3.2 million deficit is expected to be eliminated with a combination of university reserve and private funds from the division's annual portion of endowment distributions.
Main Street Arkansas Advisory Board this morning announced 29 recipients of Main Street Arkansas Awards. The biannual awards recognize individuals, organizations, and communities for their achievements in revitalizing their downtown areas. Main Street Ozark was one of the award recipients, recognized as the best public-private partnership effort for its Riverview Plaza and downtown landscaping. The Eureka Springs Downtown Network also garnered the award for Best Creative Fundraising Event for its Cocktails for a Cause. And Main Street Rogers also received a Creative Fundraising Award for its Oktoberfest event. And taking the title of most awards received is Main Street Siloam Springs, which received 6 awards, including awards for Best Total Large Building Renovation for 28 Springs, Best Web Presence and Use of Social Media, Best Window Display by Siloam Flowers, the Main Street Hero Award, an award for Outstanding Executive Director, and finally, the Spirit of Main Street Award.
Mostly cloudy tonight. Lows will be around 31 in northwest Arkansas, mid-30s for the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, slight chance of rain, highs from the upper 40s to mid-50s. And tomorrow night, cloudy, 40% chance of rain, a low of 40 in northwest Arkansas, 20% chance of rain, and a low of 47 for the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. Technological advances are pushing the limits on how we use our cell phones, tablets, and laptops. And our habits are pushing the limits on the infrastructure that supports all of this activity. Roby Brock, with our content partner Talk Business Arkansas, caught up with Ed Drilling, president of AT&T Arkansas.
Let's talk about just kind of this mobile explosion taking place in the world of telecom here. Tell me what some of the traffic has been that you have seen on your system, and the numbers are mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, it really is mind-boggling when you think about the growth in mobile data and how it just exploded over the last 5 years. Just in the last 4, we've seen a growth of over 30,000% in the amount of mobile data traffic.
30,000%?
30,000% in the amount of mobile data traffic on our network. So, you know, you think about that in terms of other kinds of infrastructure like highways or airports, and think about the growth, you know, in the kind of traffic that we're looking at in terms of our network and it's not just our network, everybody's mobile network.
How come my bill's not going up 30,000%?
Well, we're just good about not
you're working on
not
it?
Sticking it to you on that, no. But you know, the data plans have been very reasonable. So really, actually, to you know, like you're saying, I mean, compared to what you're actually getting, your bill's kind of going down. So. But it's a good value. You know, obviously people have caught on to the smartphone, tablets. Mm-hmm. You know, over half of our customers carry a smartphone now. In Arkansas especially, you know, over half the people are just wireless only. They don't have a landline at home. So that's their way they communicate, way they interconnect with the internet, and that's the way they do business.
So how do you reshape your business model? I mean, you were set up at one point in time for the legacy, you know, clients of people that had those hard lines, those landline phones, and now you're having to deploy resources, shift things a lot differently. I mean, how difficult is it to kind of keep up with that transition?
Well, we've had to pivot hard. Mm-hmm. Because I just as an example, when I first got into this job with AT&T in 2001, we had 1.2 million landline customers in Arkansas. At the end of 2013, we've got about 250,000.
Really?
So significant decrease. In the residential households that we pass, only 15% now have a landline, a traditional voice landline. So tremendous shift toward mobile and a tremendous shift towards smartphones. So we've had to build a lot of capacity and, you know, upgrade from 3G to 4G to LTE on our network in order to accommodate the need for faster speeds and more bandwidth, and that's what we've invested to do.
And what comes after LTE? Are you even ready to talk about that yet?
We'll worry about that just in a few years. But right now, we're getting really close. At the end of this year, we'll be completely LTE in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. So getting very close to getting all of it up and running.
You told me in late December we talked about just where you're seeing some more technology purchases. I think we've got a full screen graphic we're going to pull up here. I'm going to quote you in terms of what you said. You said that, I think in terms of the economy, we've seen a few slow growth years, referenced in the last couple of years. Businesses and consumers were cutting back, but the businesses seem to be coming back into the marketplace now. We're 5 years distant from the start of the recession, but why do you think now people are starting to come back into this marketplace when we've seen some positive news, but it hadn't been really robust growth?
Well, I think, when I was talking about that, I was really basically talking about equipment upgrades and major purchases by businesses to upgrade their capabilities, and that's what I think we're seeing. It was kind of a slow growth time, kind of flat, but I think businesses have put off technology purchases. I think their need for more bandwidth and more broadband is also driving some of this. We're seeing a lot of people move from the older T1 copper types of technology to an IP platform, small businesses too. Mm-hmm. The fiber that we've now taken to all of our cell sites has made it a lot cheaper for people to buy fiber and get Ethernet services to their businesses and their schools, because that's taken fiber deeper and deeper into the network. So it's much more affordable. It's close by in most cases. And we're just seeing people switch to faster broadband and the need for more bandwidth among small businesses and schools.
When you mentioned broadband in schools, that was going to be a place where I was going to pivot to, not only from a business perspective, but from a policy perspective. We've seen the state studying in about the last half of the year, a task force I know you've been a part of. There's been two task force working on this, but basically how to ramp up in a substantial way broadband service to public schools. The industry had some dispute over maybe a state analysis of where we stood in terms of the state of broadband in public schools. What do you think is realistic in terms of where we are related to those rankings and to that initial report?
Well, I think, obviously there are a lot of different reports that come out that show Arkansas that we're toward the bottom of the list of all the states in terms of broadband in the schools and in businesses and homes as well. I don't think that it's an infrastructure problem. I think it's just people figuring out what kind of service they want and asking for it. I mean, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, we've taken fiber, and so have the other providers, deeper and deeper into our networks, out in rural areas. So I think the infrastructure and the fiber and the bandwidth is out there. It's just a matter of people telling us and figuring out a way, what is it that they want and how are we going to pay for it. A lot of it in the schools, K-12 and libraries, is actually reimbursable through the federal E-rate mm-hmm. program, which is a program.
Pays up to 90% of it.
It can, depending on how many assisted lunch program students you've got in your school. But it's a very robust program. I don't know that we're taking complete full use of it like we should. But I think the solutions are out there. The providers, not just us, but all of them, I think, are wanting to be part of the solution and think that we've invested heavily across the state and have the infrastructure out there to do it.
We've got about 60 seconds left here. So there is an opportunity or possibility that there could be some discussion in this legislative session to put some money together for this broadband to public schools investment. Piggybacking on the RON network has been one of the things that's been discussed here. What do you think is the most reasonable solution from your company's perspective to solving this problem?
I think all the providers think that we've got a part to play in providing a solution. We do this for a living. We've got a lot of network capability out there that we can bring to the table and provide. We're just looking forward to working with the state somehow in providing those solutions. And granted, we need more bandwidth in the school. There's no doubt about it.
Is the RON possibility a solution to you?
It's one of the things that's being talked about. It could be.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas, diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at aecc.com.
There are many fine dining restaurants lining the steep and windy streets of Eureka Springs. But a restaurant that actually travels those streets?
There are certain parts in town where we go even slower than that because, as you know, our streets here in Eureka Springs are quite unique. And we have done several tours and have yet to spill any water on anybody. We've done really well. The tables are custom designed with a skid stop paint on the surface of the tables so that nothing slides around. There's even a skid stop tape surface on the bench seats so you don't slide out of the bench as we go around a corner. We thought well ahead about people moving around as we go around corners.
We hop aboard a rolling restaurant in just under 25 minutes here on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, what makes Tunisia different? The country that sparked the Arab Spring now has a working constitution and democracy, while its neighbor Egypt is mired in political upheaval. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen to NPR's Here and Now this afternoon from 1 to 3 here on 91.3 FM.
A name is often a very important thing because it can say a lot about who you are. To make sure residents and visitors have a better sense of their identity and function, a number of local organizations have been making changes. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Last November, the Rogers Advertising and Promotions Commission voted to change the name of the Rogers Convention and Visitors Bureau to Visit Rogers. Allison Twiggs Dyer, Executive Director for Visit Rogers, says it's been a trend nationally for visitors bureaus to use an action word in front of their city's name. Some examples include Experience Columbus, Choose Chicago, and Visit Hot Springs. Dyer says she has been thinking about the name change for a couple of years and felt now was a good time to make the switch.
I've been in the tourism industry about 13 years, and for 13 years I've had to explain to people what a CVB is and what they do. And so for a long time I've wanted to make this change because Visit Rogers is more in tune with what we do every day. We ask people to visit Rogers and come to our great city. So we're really excited about the change. We've got a new logo now, and we're starting to get the word out that this is our name and change letterhead and business cards and all that. But it's exciting. It's an exciting change, and I think it'll convey better what it is we do every day.
With the organization's website address, visitrogersarkansas.com, and with the phrase Visit Rogers already in use on their various social media outlets, Dyer says the last step was to officially change the bureau's name. The new logo is very similar to the most recent logo created for the city. Dyer explains the city of Rogers underwent a branding process about 3 years ago. One of the results was a logo featuring an open door and the tagline, Where Possible Lives.
We asked folks, what is it they thought about Rogers? You know, what is it they wanted a visitor to know about Rogers if they came to visit here? And what we found was that we were a city of open doors, and we were a city where possible lives. And we really loved that. We thought that really resonated with what we wanted to tell future residents and visitors. When they come to Rogers, they're going to be welcomed with open doors. We're very friendly here, and anything's possible. You can go shopping, you can go to a convention, you'll be able to explore all of Northwest Arkansas from the hub of Rogers and stay at any one of our great hotels. Branding is very important. It's sort of a blueprint for what we need to do every day and the story we're telling every day, so that we're not telling people a confusing story every other week. You know, we stay on path with what our branding is telling us, and the Visit Rogers name change really fit well into our branding of Where Possible Lives.
Ads that go out for Visit Rogers this year will incorporate the new logo. The Bentonville Convention and Visitors Bureau may also undergo some changes in 2014. The organization has been requesting proposals for a new branding and advertising campaign. Kayleen Griffith has been the president and CEO of the Bentonville CVB for 8 years. She says prior to 3 years ago, Bentonville was mostly a business destination. Now, she says it has become much more of a leisure destination. Currently, the CVB has a very simple brand. Its logo features a star in the middle of Bentonville's O, but it has no tagline or any of those action words like experience or discover that have become more and more popular. Griffith says hopefully marketing and advertising firms will help them in creating an image that better reflects the town's new identity as a tourist destination.
We could have done this before Crystal Bridges opened up, but I felt personally that we needed to wait to see what we were going to, what our identity was going to be in a couple of years, what our community, how our community was going to evolve from the, you know, that catalyst of Crystal Bridges opening up. And now we are seeing kind of a new trend with our restaurants, and probably, you know, with the Arts District being approved last night and the Market District being approved in the City Council, we have some things that are going to be happening in the future, and hopefully we can create a brand that creates a promise to our visitors and creates an identity to our visitors that we are going to always be that business destination, and we don't want to lose that identity, but we want to add to that identity and create a new and an exciting option for those, for that leisure market to understand that there's a lot to do in our community.
Griffith says the decision to update or change a brand varies from community to community. It can happen when there's a massive change in the community's identity, or perhaps when an old campaign becomes tired. She hopes this process will result in the creation of a strong brand so people feel that connection to the community. Tomorrow is the last day for proposal submissions, and Griffith says they are going to have open minds when listening to the new ideas. She expects to be reviewing samples for their new brand in late March or early April, and to kick off the new advertising campaign by May.
My hope is that at the end of the day, when we finalize our brand, is that it's something that everybody can take in and utilize in some way, and have a positive feeling about Bentonville and our brand, and feel like it's part of their everyday experience in Bentonville.
Some changes in Fayetteville may take a bit longer than a few months. The city is changing its web address as well as email addresses for employees. Paul Becker, Chief Financial Officer for the City of Fayetteville, says the change has been prompted by some IT issues. The city's current email system is no longer being supported, so they're going to migrate to Microsoft Outlook. They needed to change their domain in order to do that, so Becker says they decided to simplify the city's web address at the same time. Instead of accessfayetteville.org, the new web address will be fayetteville-ar.gov.
It seems like that's an easier one to remember. Certainly it's easier to remember when we remember our own personal addresses here at the city as employees. It's certainly easier for me to remember, and I think we all felt that that would be easier for the citizens to recognize and remember.
Both addresses will get you to the city's website for a while. Becker expects the migration won't be completed until the end of this year, or perhaps sometime during the first quarter of 2015. Employees' email addresses have also been changed to @fayetteville-ar.gov, and much like the web address, both the new and old email addresses will function for some time. Becker says it will cost about $125 a year to register the new domain name. There will also be about a $100,000 annual cost for the new email system. Becker says the goal is to keep the website address as simple as possible and something that's easily recognizable, because it has become more of a communication link with local citizens than it used to be.
We certainly live in a community where we have a lot of citizen involvement. We can see that in many ways. We see that in our communication level with our citizens. We can see that in how much of a volunteer participation that we see, and that's very, very important to us. So it's important that we keep those lines of communication simple and current to our citizens, because it helps all of us. It helps us communicate what the city's doing. It helps us with public information. It helps us with letting them know opportunities if they wish to volunteer for the city. So it helps both the city and helps both the citizens. It helps us to receive input and what citizens are interested in. So the two-way communication is certainly very, very important to us, and we're always striving to improve that.
Once the change is complete, Becker says the city will work on a marketing strategy to ensure local residents have access to the proper website. You can start using the new address right now by visiting fayetteville-ar.gov. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thank you.
The city of Huntington, Arkansas, just south of Greenwood, recently received a $90,000 community enhancement grant from the Arkansas Department for Rural Services. The city, with a population of 635, plans to build a new city hall in a vacant lot across from the 100-year-old dilapidated building that is the current city hall. Yesterday, I spoke with Huntington Fire Chief Gary Lawrence, who says they've been thinking about a new building for quite a while.
We worked on this project probably the last 4 or 5 years trying to seek funding to build a new city hall, and luckily this past year we received a grant.
Did you grow up in Huntington?
Yes.
Yeah, so City Hall has been sort of a staple in your town for quite some time.
Yes, it has. As far as we can tell, the City Hall we're in now is the only one that the city's ever had. The city was incorporated in 1888.
What is wrong with the current building?
It's beyond repair. It's obsolete. We can't bring it up to, you know, the standards. And, you know, it's just an old building that served its time, and we've outgrown it.
So it will be demolished, potentially?
You know, we really hadn't decided what we're going to do. There's a group that would like to try to do some work on it and just make it a museum. You know, it's one of a few buildings that's left in our town from the coal mining days, and they'd like to preserve it. I don't know if it's going to be feasible to do that or not.
And your town was big in coal mining?
At one time it was. You know, in its heyday, we were well over 5,000 population. We had numerous stores and saloons and theaters. It was a coal mining town. It was a booming town, you know, probably in the early 1900s. It was really a bustling town.
What made you decide to apply for this grant from the Arkansas Department of Rural Services?
You know, being a resident and a hometown kid, I've watched our town go down because of the economics of our, you know, our nation. And, you know, when you can work to try to get a grant and bring something new to the community, a new building, seem like it'll stimulate the pride in the community again, you know, that maybe people will take pride in their property and we can attract some businesses to our community.
And so that's the hope, because one of my questions is, you know, you don't have, your population is just over 600 people, right?
That's correct.
You know, I mean, forgive me, but I'm kind of like, why does a town with that, it's not a lot, why does a town with just over 600 people need, you know, a city hall?
Well, you know, it's the hub of the community, and you know, this is where people meet. We have meetings, and you know, you want something nice for your community. You want something nice for people to be proud of, and you know, the city hall is the hub of the community, and that's, you know, that's why we want one.
When you talk about, you know, meeting there and stuff like that, you know, often the fire chief of a town isn't quite that involved as far as, you know, I mean, like something like this. So, I mean, you're a pretty tight-knit community as far as things go.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've been affiliated with the town for most of my adult life. My dad started our fire department back in 1970, and I've just always been involved in the community, and that's something I want to continue to do and to see our community be the best that it can be for its size.
Well, this grant, it's $90,000.
That's correct.
Which, that sounds like a lot to me, but when you talk about building a building like a city hall, I mean, you can maybe build a small house with $90,000, but it's not that much, you know, it's not a huge amount of money as far as building a city hall. How do you plan to use these funds?
We're going to, Chris, you know, as a city, we have to take competitive bids, and we're just going to try to, you know, bid it as close as we can, and hopefully maybe get some donated labor along the way, some donated material along the way, you know, do the best we can to get a building built.
Where will the building be located?
It'll be across the street from the existing City Hall on Broadway Street. So that's the local, the city owns the property. It's a clear piece of property. It's level, so it won't be, you know, we're going to have a lot of dirt work to do.
And what is the plan for the look, the layout? Will it be similar to the current city?
You know, we are working on plans. The building that used to sit on the property that we're going to build on was the old company store, the old Siemens store. And we're hoping that we can make the front of the city hall similar to the company store to preserve that heritage and that history for our community. So it's going to be a modern building with an antique look is what our plans are.
Are your people excited?
Oh, absolutely. The community, I've not seen the community involved and excited in a long time like they are now. It's really a big deal for a small town to receive that type of grant.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of money. That's
really,
for sure.
Really.
Well, and speaking of small town, this grant, it was open to any community up to 20,000 people.
Right.
635 to 20,000 there, that's a big difference.
Yes, it is.
Do you have any idea how many other communities you were kind of up against?
You know, I don't. I have no idea how many other applications they had on that grant. I really don't know.
How did the Arkansas Department of Rural Services, how did they notify you that you had won?
They sent us a letter congratulating us on the grant along with the check.
Yeah. So the money is already in the bank.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, well, that's good. And just for my, I was looking at your website, and there are quite a few firefighters there at your fire department.
Absolutely. We're actually proud of our fire department. We have, and I guess maybe I'm being boastful, but I believe we've got one of the best departments in the county.
Yeah. Have you guys been dealing with, I know there are a lot of burn bans and house fires and stuff like that going around. Have you been busy?
We have been fortunate. We've had a few structure fires, a few grass fires. It's been relatively quiet for our part of the country.
Well, that's good. That was Huntington Fire Chief Gary Lawrence. I spoke with him over the phone yesterday. This is Ozarks at Large.
Every school year, thousands of Arkansans go to fields, courts, tracks, and gyms to watch local teams compete. High school football, basketball, and some baseball teams are regularly on radio and receive inches of coverage in newspapers and online. Other sports don't receive as much attention, and some are still relatively new programs. Wrestling has only been an Arkansas high school sport for a few years. Bowling, too, has been added in the past few. The first Arkansas high school bowling season for girls was 2004-2005. The seasons for boys didn't come for a few more years. For this academic year, nearly 75 school districts are fielding teams, from some of the biggest, like Springdale and Bentonville, to some of the schools with the smallest enrollments, like Norfolk and Haas Hall Academy in Fayetteville. This week, Clarksville hosted its first home match of the season against BB, and the Clarksville Panthers coach, John Sandlin, set his lineups as the bowlers warmed up.
Girls, Haley Falcons, Kara, and Holly will be together. Then Miranda Thomas, Savannah, and Haley Bassigale will be together. Right.
More than two dozen students were at the Sherwood Bowl in Clarksville Tuesday afternoon. Coach Sandlin says bowling is a democratic game. The kid's not big enough or fast enough or quick enough or simply not interested in some of the other higher profile sports can excel at the lanes.
Oh, yes. And we've got some kids. One of my boys sitting here today, he's an all-conference football player, great big lineman. And we've got kids that this is the only thing that they do, that they are bowlers. They come and they're in the youth bowl program. They've been bowling since they were 5 years old. And they're, like you said, those are kids that couldn't play football if they wanted to or run track or anything like that. But this does give them a chance to come out and compete and have a good time.
The Arkansas Activities Association, the organization governing high school sports, uses the rules and guidelines established by the United States Bowling Congress. Teams of six boys and six girls compete, and the season will conclude next month with conference and state tournaments. John Sandlin, the Clarksville coach, is also part of that school's football coaching staff. He says while he can scout film of other football teams, bowling is all about getting better yourself.
It's a lot like track. You're a lot about beating yourself, beating your own score. You're coming out, you know what your average is, you know what your high score is, and you're coming out and trying to compete the best that you can. And it adds something that you are competing against somebody else, but you're really more worried about yourself and how you do. More of an individualized sport.
While high school bowling has been in Arkansas for less than a decade, youth bowling has a long history in the state. Catherine Johnson Tilley, the co-owner of the Sherwood Bowl in Clarksville, is a retired teacher and says she's been working with young bowlers for quite a while. And she's glad the sport has finally been recognized by the Arkansas Activities Association.
Well, I like the people. I like the interaction, the social situation with the people. And we have some very good people that bowl. I have really never met a bad person that's bowling. So, and these young people, we have a Saturday Youth League. And sometimes I recruit some of these bowlers. Sometimes I kind of encourage them to get in there because it gives them extra practice. We have Ozark, like I said, in Clarksville, and Lamar is joining us this year. So we're starting with Lamar, too.
Lamar, 9 miles from Clarksville, is using these lanes as their home for their first season of bowling this year. Both of the teams at the alley on this day, Clarksville and Beebe, are 5A schools. Not among the largest districts in the state, but certainly not among the smallest either. Each year, more small schools are adding bowling, a sport that, transportation to away games excluded, can increase the opportunity for more students to be part of a team with limited expense. Shoes and bowling balls, after all, can be found at any alley. Andy O'Mara, the coach for the Beebe Badgers, is in his third season in that position. He says the program began at Beebe 7 years ago, and some years as many as 30 boys or girls will try out for the team, many of them seeking a chance to be part of a team.
That's what I have. The kind of kids that we have at Beebe are the kids that don't do the other sports. I think it's probably because they're needed or they want to, the kids that are in the other sports, they work year round, you know. But we get those kids that just don't do hardly anything, and they enjoy it. They have fun with it.
Daryl Johnson, who co-owns the Sherwood Bowl in Clarksville, says he fell in love with bowling when he was just 8. By 16, he was bowling in top team USA youth tournaments around the country, and he's rolled 8 perfect games. But he's too old to have been able to participate on a high school team.
When I was in high school, I wish they'd have had this. They started this, I was probably out. We started about 8 years ago. Yeah, I've been out for a while, so about 10 years. But I wish they would have had this when I was in high school. But I think it's good, though. I mean, it's a good team event, really. I mean, it's not focused on one certain person, so.
John Sandlin, the coach for the Clarksville Panthers, says interest continues to grow at his school, though he does say there has been one challenge.
The biggest struggle that I see at our program and programs that we go against are the girls. We really struggle to have enough girls to come out and bowl. And the girls, we've got 4 or 5 girls on the team that this is their first time to bowl. But they come out and they have a really good time. And they get a lot better as the season goes on.
And Beebe coach Andy O'Mara points out that really great time could help defray college costs.
You can get to college on this now.
Right.
Arkansas State, number one team in the nation.
The Arkansas State Red Wolves are, in fact, currently on top of the NCAA polls. More than 60 NCAA colleges and universities, including Vanderbilt and Tulane, now offer women's bowling, and most of them have scholarships available. Scholarship earned or not, many of the Arkansas high school bowlers will have something they can carry with them long after graduation. They're cool bowling shirts. Both Clarksville and Beebe have opted for the traditional, somewhat retro look of classic bowling apparel. Again, Beebe bowling coach Andy O'Mara.
Kids like them, you know, and they pay for them. It's theirs, so they get to keep them when they're done. But some groups, I don't know if you've noticed, these are true bowling shirts. You don't have to tuck them in, and that's what the kids like. Some groups have polo shirts, and those have to be by rule, they have to be tucked in. So the kids that I have, you know, they don't really like that. So we stick with these, and they like them.
Most bowling matches begin shortly after school is out, around 4, so the spectators are few. The first 2 games of each match are much like league games, sets of bowlers each rolling 10 frames, and the total scores for each team added up. Unlike leagues, there are no handicaps. Total pins are actual total pins. There are also what are called Baker games, when bowling does become more of a traditional team sport. In those games, one bowler rolls the first frame, then a teammate bowls the next frame, and a third bowler rolls after that.
That's real team bowling, and that's fun to watch. It's exciting because everybody builds on the previous person's ball, on the previous person's frame, and it builds and builds, and you know, when one guy does good, it encourages the other one to do well and just go and go keep on going.
The day after this matchup, Clarksville would be back in the Sherwood Bowl to meet Ozark, a school just up Interstate 40, and another school that calls these lanes their home turf. For Catherine Johnson-Tilley, co-owner of the lanes, there will be no cheering for either team.
I said, I'm not on the side, so I'm a bowler, you know, and you're a bowler, and so that's the way it goes. And anyone, it is a sport that anyone can participate in. Little, big, middle-sized, medium, huge, small, whatever.
Clarksville, BB, and Ozark will all hope to be in Fort Smith next month. The 4A, 5A state championships will be held at Bowling World there on February 20th. This is Ozarks at Large.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday. We've got Lavelle White, Omar Coleman, Dave Riley and Bob Kortor, Grandpa Elliott, Cena Earhart, Pete Anderson, and a few others. And again, that's every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
In just a few minutes, we'll take a ride aboard that trolley. But first, a few notes. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art has announced the creation of the William Reese Company Teacher Fellowship. It was established by the William Reese Company of New Haven, Connecticut, which works with collectors and institutions in the acquisition of rare books and manuscripts, as well as in collection development. The Reese Teacher Fellowship is open to high school educators affiliated with a public, private, or charter school. The fellowship will be a one-month residential program that includes a $4,000 stipend, which may be used to cover transportation and housing costs during the recipient's residence at Crystal Bridges. Fellows will be selected on the basis of their project narrative and the potential to enrich high school curriculum based on an interdisciplinary connection between American art, primary and secondary print resources, and a subject topic. Curriculum subject areas may be language arts, history, social studies, or science, and contribute to the understanding of a topic as it intersects with American art. Information on applying for the Reese Teacher Fellowship is available at crystalbridges.org/library. Applications will be accepted through March 1st.
On February 13th, the city of Lowell will host its fifth annual American Red Cross Blood Drive in memory of Hannah Grace Crumby. The four-year-old was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia in September 2009 after having a low-grade fever for several days. She lost her fight with the disease just 2 months later. The upcoming blood drive is scheduled for 2 to 7 p.m. February 13th at Lowell City Hall. By the way, the winter months are a difficult time to collect blood donations because of bad weather and flu and cold. Eligible donors with all blood types are needed to help restock the shelves. There continues to be an urgent need for blood donors with type O, especially type O negative. Donors with types A negative and B negative also urgently needed. You can visit redcrossblood.org for more information.
A kickoff reception for the 2014 Upstream Art Project will be Saturday, February 15th from 5 to 7 at the Fayetteville Underground. Project representatives and previous artists will be available to answer questions about upstream art and show off the previous year's art. Those interested in taking part in this year's project should attend. There are 12 storm drains identified for the 2014 project. A committee will select designs from those submitted. Each art piece will be approved by the appropriate city's mayor. Keep in mind the messages they are trying to convey as you create your design, that storm drains lead to creeks and streams. They're asking all designs to have the message "drains to creek" in English or Spanish somewhere in the art. The design may be tailored based on a specific location or choose to do a more general design that could apply to any storm drain. For more information, contact Jane Maganaw with the Cooperative Extension Service at 444-1755.
Here's something that's kind of cool. The USA Water Ski and American Water Ski Association's International Activities Committee announced that the 2014 U.S. Junior Water Ski Team Trials will be held in late June, the 28th and 29th, at Cedar Creek Ski Park in Elkins, just outside of Fayetteville. This two-round world record capability water ski tournament will be used to select the four-member U.S. Junior Water Ski Team that will be defending its title at the 15th Junior Water Ski World Championships in July and August in the Ukraine. Some of the finest athletes in the world will be in town competing for that coveted spot on the U.S. team. For more information, you can call the Fayetteville Visitors Center at 521-5776, or you can go to experiencefayetteville.com.
So from Elkins to the Ukraine.
Sure. I like that.
Why not?
I didn't mention the town in the city in the Ukraine because I don't know. It's Dnepropetrovsk.
So if somebody knows how to pronounce that,
let us know. Next time you plan to venture into Eureka Springs to ride the trolley and enjoy a fine meal at one of many local restaurants, you could consider combining the two. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us aboard Café Roulon.
Howdy, folks. Welcome to Café Roulon.
Tom Tharp, dressed in vintage conductor gear, invites us aboard his antique green trolley with redwood trim parked in front of the Eureka Springs Visitor Center of Pine Mountain Village. Server Aaliyah Wade meets us inside, standing among a half dozen white linen-covered tables set with heavy china, silverware, and thick glassware prepared for this evening's dinner guests.
This is a reconditioned Eureka Springs retired city trolley. It's one of the old original trolleys that Chance Motor Coach Company built over in Kansas many years ago, and they were built to look as much like a San Francisco trolley that people have in their mind as possible. So it's not just a bus with a thing on the roof. It actually looks like a trolley. The interior, we repurposed as many of the old original mahogany seats as we could. So the only thing that we did not recycle were the tables. We had to custom build some tables. But we reused all the brass poles. We've still got the leather handholds up on the top of the poles, just like the original trolleys had in them. So you really get the feel that you're still in a trolley, but you get to eat dinner.
Now, if Tom Tharp's voice sounds familiar, it's because this Carroll County native is a fixture on Eureka's landscape, operating Eureka Carriage, the city's popular horse-drawn guided historic tour. But he's been planning this venture for several years.
So we just kind of were looking around, and the trolley idea just kind of fell into our lap, and we gave it a shot, and it actually works. We've got a full-size kitchen refrigerator freezer in here to keep drinks cold and ice, of course, and desserts. Everything else is chef-prepared.
Tom Tharp, who will drive the trolley, invented the concept after seeing horse-drawn wagon cafes in Europe and double-decker restaurant buses in China. He believes this is the first restaurant of its kind in the United States. Café Roulon's partnered with the finest restaurants in the city, including Cottage Inn, which serves Mediterranean cuisine, DeVito's Italian Restaurant, specializing in fresh trout, and local American Bistro, farm to table fresh.
We have a rotating list right now with four different restaurants, and we plan on adding to that as the tourist season progresses. Each night, the chef will prepare a special menu just for us that's not on any regular menu anywhere in town.
Dinner tours are $44 per person and last for about an hour. Reservations are encouraged. Walk-ups are welcome. During the season, March through December, lunch is served at 1 p.m., dinner at 6 and 8. Café Roulon always departs from the Eureka Springs Visitor Center, where there's plenty of free parking. In the evenings, the trolley is softly illuminated after dark with ambient music.
We drive around at a leisurely 10 miles an hour. There are certain parts in town where we go even slower than that because, as you know, our streets here in Eureka Springs are quite unique. And we have done several tours and have yet to spill any water on anybody. We've done really well. The tables are custom designed with a skid stop paint on the surface of the tables so that nothing slides around. There's even a skid stop tape surface on the bench seats so you don't slide out of the bench as we go around a corner. We thought well ahead about people moving around as we go around corners.
Café Roulon seats a dozen patrons comfortably or more intimately and can accommodate small group events such as private parties and weddings.
And it'll just be friends and family on board, and we can drive around for an hour or so, let everybody celebrate and have a good time.
Then Tom Tharp's already planning to expand excursions.
Beginning in the spring, sometime around April or May, we will also be doing lake tours out around Beaver Lake. We'll actually be crossing over Beaver Dam, hopefully around the sunset evening part of the time. So it'll be a nice view seeing the sunset out over the lake and driving around some parts that most people don't get to see.
The menu changes every day, says Tom Tharp, and the scenery every minute. Café Roulon does not have a liquor license, so patrons are encouraged to bring aboard their alcoholic beverage of choice to accompany your three-course meal and the scenery. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Cafe Roulon will open for Valentine's Day dinner. Winter hours are Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evenings. Menus are posted daily on Facebook. Visit rollingcafe.com for reservations.
It is Thursday, January 30th, the next to last day of January 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm going to talk about a gentleman named Charlie Ross,
who's
insane, but he's good insane. His mom started reading him The Hobbit when he was a little boy, and he became a little obsessed. And so after graduating from university with a theater degree and creating the now well-known one-man Star Wars, he started to write a one-man show that includes all three books of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. And it is coming to the Walton Arts Center on Saturday.
Now, I'm betting that he puts all three of these books into a forum, into a venue that is shorter than any of the one of the three movies.
I think it's 70 minutes total.
I am all for this. This is how I should have seen it. What?
How long are the movies combined?
Not long enough.
No one has ever seen them all.
Yeah.
He does 40 characters and all the sound effects, including like the battle at Helm's Deep. And Gollum, he does an amazing Gollum. They're both shrugging at me.
Okay. I know Gollum.
Those of you who are out there who are crazy. My precious.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Yes, yeah.
He says, this actor says, I became obsessed with how you recreate the sound. And if you see what the character is saying, you can do the voice. If you don't know who these people are, you are going to be in trouble.
That's one thing I wonder, because there was the one-person Harry Potter here last year.
Mm-hmm.
Two-person Harry Potter. And all seven books, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I haven't read Harry Potter or seen the movies, not because I don't want to. I just haven't gotten there yet. It's a pop culture gap. But I'm wondering, if you go to these and you don't know the stories, can you hang with it? Or
I don't think so,
okay.
But I think you'd have a great time.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Would you still be entertained?
Because I'm thinking about taking my daughter, and although I've been reading The Hobbit to her since she was tiny, she has no idea about the rest of The Lord of the Rings or...
See,
but I think it goes so fast and it's so funny.
Right.
I think you'd have a good time even if you had no idea what he was talking about.
I've seen the Royal Shakespeare Company with their condensed, abridged mm-hmm. William Shakespeare. I want to see the one-person Godfather at some point. I want someone to work on that.
You are so odd. Okay, One Man Lord of the Rings, 4 and 8 on Saturday. Tickets start at $19. I will be there. Don't let the infidels bother you.
All right.
Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Dnipropetrovsk.
Oh, Iceland.
No, that's the Ukraine city where the U.S., where the world... Junior Water Ski Championships will take place that I couldn't pronounce earlier today.
Right.
Dnipropetrovsk.
You figured it out.
Yeah, the D is silent.
I accidentally said Iceland because you like Iceland.
I love Iceland.
So. Yes. But this is not Iceland. Ukraine.
Ukraine, where I've never been.
Okay.
Maybe that's where I should go next.
Maybe.
My wife would kill
me. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
You and Antoinette will be back together tomorrow.
That's right. But Super Bowl Sunday...
We have sort of a special Super Bowl Sunday edition of Weekend of Ozarks at Large.
We do.
And you and I will be together.
And that'll be Sunday morning at 9.
That's right.
Do you have a rooting interest?
Colorado, I guess.
Denver,
yeah.
The Broncos, okay.
Just because I haven't ever been to Seattle.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
All right. Fair enough.
I just like the commercials. During the Super Bowl.
Oh, you had the commercials for Denver. And I gotcha. All right. Yeah, I guess I'll root for Seattle. They've never won the Super Bowl.
Okay.
So...
Well, there you go.
All right.
Well, until then, thank you so much for listening and have a good Thursday.